Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Leafs, Bruins, Game 5, Boston tonight. Leafs have one power play goal in the series. Do you remember it?
Nope.
Me neither. Bruins have many more than that.
Don't remember it.
Okay, so just talked about this in general terms earlier, but now I have specific numbers I want to bring to you. Because special teams and goaltending. Sheldon Keefe rightly pointing out that they are related, friends. And sure, okay. Do the Leafs have the world's best penalty killers? Probably not. I mean, they've got some guys that have had some success, though. I don't know, Connor Dewar didn't play in Game 4, but yeah, he was a guy that was acquired for his penalty-killing prowess. Joel Edmondson, acquired for his penalty-killing prowess. TJ Brody has been a pretty good penalty killer throughout the course of his career. Mitch Marner has been a great penalty killer.
Selke Winger, I believe, is his like middle name.
Anyways, it's also the goaltender that is responsible for you know, like literally the last line of defense before the puck goes in the net.
Yeah.
Okay? So here are the numbers, just the raw numbers. These are the 5-on-4 power play numbers. Okay. So doesn't count the Maple Leafs goalie pulled end of the game power play goal that the Bruins scored in one of those games, which I don't remember. Okay, both teams have pretty similar minute totals on the power play in this series. Bruins have played 19-25 on the 5-on-4 power play. They have 5 goals on 21 shots. That's a save percentage of .762 for Jeremy Swayman and Linus Allmark, who started game 2 of the series. Save percentage of Ilya Samsonov.
Sorry, so, okay, yeah. I was super confused and I didn't want to derail your thought, but thank you for correcting yourself.
Obviously, Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman do not have a combined save percentage of .762. That is Ilya Samsonov's save percentage. Here's the save percentage of Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman killing penalties.
Let me guess, better than .762.
.941. As the Maple Leafs, in 22 minutes and 43 seconds of 5-on-4 power play action, have 17 shots and one goal in there. So you can talk about, the structure and the personnel and the yada and the yada yada.
And the yada yada yada.
But man, how close, like we talked about the blame pie of the overall series. Let's get specific into like talking about the specific piece of pie.
Okay.
When penalty we're talking kill? About special right. teams and okay, power play, it's okay. those guys, but
part
like
parcel, yeah.
penalty kill, what portion of the pie resides at the feet of Ilya Samsonov and their inability to kill penalties so far through 4 games in this series?
45%. Maybe that's too strong. I don't know. Maybe
I don't think it's strong enough.
You don't think it's strong enough. I am including in my blame pie in all of this the coaching staff. Like I think if I am dividing this pie up into 3 pieces,
okay.
I'm going to remove Treliving from it because it's like the bed has been made at this point. Like we could talk about roster construction, but that's a kind of a different conversation. If there are 3 people trying to hungry hippo this pie as quickly as they can, it's the players killing the penalty. It's Ilya Samsonov and it's the coaching staff. I don't think you can take, I'm not saying to take blame away from the players. I'm not saying to take it away from Samsonov, but I think you got to throw some of the blame pie on the coaching staff there. The idea that the Bruins are able to get such clean looks for elite talent. Forget the ones that have gone in. There was that Pasternak shot at the end of game or the period in game 2 or game 3. Or no, that one did go in. The point blank look for Pasternak there. That is coaching. That is a little bit of roster, sure. That's a little bit of player decisions, yes. It's also coaching. So I'm going to put 40-some-odd% of it on Samsonov. But if I'm looking at the other 60%, I'm not saying it's a dead split, but I'm giving at least 10-15% of that to coaching staff. I think tactics are a part of this for sure.
I mean, they're a part of it. And if they weren't, you wouldn't pay coaches anything. You wouldn't have them. You'd be like, why do we even have
right. them? 100 of them for that matter.
Yeah, let the players coach themselves. So, like, I'm not discounting the coaching being a factor, but I'm breaking up the pie very differently. To me, it's goaltending 60% of the penalty kill problems. And I would put 35% of the remaining 40 at the feet of the players and the personnel, and maybe 5% goes to coaching, but there's just no debate. The Maple Leafs have been, man, start to finish, and so much of it has been Ilya Samsonov's inability to perform at a high level, but they've been one of the worst goaltending teams in the NHL this season, okay? The goaltending has not helped them at all this season. It's been a major part of why the penalty kill has been bad all season. Now, again, like, are they a different team with better penalty killers? No question. Are they a better team if they're coached differently? I suppose, but man, penalty killing is... I mean, how much structure is there really when you got four guys running around just trying to block shots and get in the way of passing lanes?
Well, I think part of the problem with that, and hey, like down the stretch, injuries, and I'm not talking about what they're dealing with right now. I'm talking about Marner missing all the time he did and Yarncroc missing all the time he did. But I think part of coaching is having consistent units. And, you know, I am the king of saying, there actually should be some fluidity in the forward lines throughout a game or throughout a season. But I think that is where, and it's funny because... it's been the exact opposite on the power play. It's like the guys who are playing power play time are playing power play time, and there's come hell or high water, there is nothing that can be done to take that power play time away from those guys. It feels like, and again, part of it has been injuries, part of it has been health, there has not been, and part of it's been deadline acquisitions, there has not been a consistent penalty-killing unit for this team. And do you put that on Brad Treliving? Do you put that on Sheldon Keefe? I suppose the answer is yes, but that's what I think. It's not coaching. I don't say coaching to say Keefe's not.
Oh, the actual, know, the like strategy in game. You're talking about like the deciding which units play.
And the idea of having something you could trust heading into the postseason in there. I think that's all part and parcel, part of coaching, and that's why I included in the, you know, 15-20% of the blame pie that I'm giving to them. I think this isn't a right now mistake. This is a January, February, December mistake.
So we defer to Jason Bukala at all times, the great big hockey brain that is residing within the skull of Jason Bukala.
In the country of Finland right now.
Yeah. And he very much quashed this theory. But it's been a minute since we talked to him, and I don't think, like, he's in a rink right now. He's watching a game. He's watching some
U18s. He likes us, but not that much.
Yeah, I don't think he's streaming the rest of the show, so we can differ if we want to. Mitch Marner, it was a horrible look. Everybody has the exact same take about throwing the gloves, and
agreed.
It did seem like both William Nylander and Austin Matthews were yelling directly at him.
But certainly seemed that way.
It also should be stated that he scored his best goal of the playoffs. Gorgeous. In fact, the only goal he scored this postseason, second point, in the third period, and looked much better in the third period. Is it possible? Like, we talk so much about, hey, Sheldon Keefe laying it all on the line because he knows he's out of here if they don't win this series. Is there a possibility that Mitch Marner says, screw it, to hell with it? Like, it can't get any worse from a narrative perspective for me that there would be a freeing for him headed into tonight's Game 5, that something broke for him on the bench in the second period of Saturday's Game 4.
I'm not poo-pooing that theory. I just don't think the stuff you've seen out of Marner in this playoffs is what would lead me to believe. In the past, I feel like there has been a gripping too tight of the stick or trying to force things to happen. I don't feel like that's been the case for Marner. I just feel like it hasn't been happening. So if it was a guy kind of forcing it or trying too much, I would see maybe that having some effect, but I don't think it's been the case. I just think it hasn't been going his way. So I'd love to be proven wrong, but, you know, generally speaking, when things have kind of spiraled for that player, it's not proved to be a thing of motivation for him. It is, generally speaking, gone the other way. I'd love to be proven wrong about this.
Yeah, it's probably part of the reason why we hear such little pushback from the head coach, such little criticism from the head coach, such little... I mean, we've seen it in spurts. We've seen him miss a shift and then, you know, slam his stick.
Yeah.
In the background.
Is that a pattern?
But yeah, we have not seen that tact when it comes to Mitch Marner and getting the best out of him. Also mentioned the possibility to Jason Bukala about breaking up the top power play unit. I mean, I think Luke Fox wrote eloquently about this on Sportsnet.ca.
As he always does.
Yeah, it's a different deal because the Bruins don't have the offensive talent that the Maple Leafs have, right? There's not like an obvious five-man unit where it's like all the $50 million of player need to play on the top power play unit. Right. But it's also been a power play that's been pretty dominant at times, and you do have some pretty big-name players on that power play unit. Game 81, they broke it up into two separate units.
Yep.
They created competition within the group, And they've scored five times on the 5-on-4 in this series.
Goes back to culture for me. I think you're right that I am, and I've been the first person to point that out. When people say, oh, well, look at Boston. I go, well, it's a little easy when you kind of have two guys. You could say this one's yours, this one's theirs. Yeah. When the Leafs have always been tied together at the hip as this unit. But when I look at the culture thing, the culture in Boston is, and a lot of places like that have won, is push each other and poke and prod and try to get the best. And with the Leafs, what do we always hear? Oh, these guys want to play together. Mm-hmm. If they could have four guys on a line, they'd love it. It'd be their favorite thing. It's just not the way that this group seems to operate. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I think we've kind of had our chances to do that, and it hasn't been the case. I think that's why. It's there is a culture of internal competition there. I think so much of it is from the fact that outside of Pastrnak and Marchand, you can quibble with who the third best to, I don't know, ninth best forward on that team is. Whereas with the Leafs, there is a much clearer delineation and pecking order. Even once you get past the top four, it's like, okay, there's Domi, there's Bertuzzi, there's Yarncroc, there's McMahon. Like, it's very easy the way they all kind of slide in. So I think with Boston, they have that, and it is helped by the fact that there is not such a set in stone pecking order beyond the top two forwards.
Yeah.
And that's not an excuse. I think that's all part of the way this thing's been put together.
It's not great. All right, let's talk to Jake Allen. Devils goalie making his analyst debut earlier in these Stanley Cup playoffs on Hockey Night in Canada, doing a great job. Jake, how's it going? Thanks for doing this.
Good. Thanks for having me.
So how do you evaluate Ilya Samsonov's play in the series? Looks like he's probably done, that it's probably Joe Woll starting in Game 5 tonight. I mean, how responsible for the series deficit do you think the Maple Leafs goalie is?
No, I don't think he's at fault at all, to be honest. Obviously, there's a couple goals you'd want back. And as a goalie myself, obviously, being in the playoffs in those situations, there is those moments. But also, I think, you know, you go look at game two. I think he made a couple stops in the third period that turned that game around. It basically ended up giving the Leafs momentum, ended up capitalized on that victory. And, you know, obviously, they're going to Woll for game five. More of a momentum change, obviously, too. But I think the Leafs' belief that Woll can, you know, do the job. I played against him a few times this year. He looks super sharp. We saw what he did last year in the playoffs when he came in. And I think it's to change things up. You know, sometimes those things work, and obviously they're on their last life. So hopefully he plays great for them tonight.
One of the things we hear about Joe Woll is his ability to kind of compartmentalize. Like, you know, he's a, you know, I don't mean this as a knock, but like, he's a classic goalie. He's a little odd. Like, he likes to go backpacking in Europe, and he plays the piano. And I feel like he's able to kind of keep all these things very, very quiet. You've been in a lot of different positions in your career. You've been a guy who has come in to be that change of pace guy. You've been a guy who's been a great starter. How much do you think Joe Woll's kind of mental makeup allows him to come in and not feel like he has to turn this series around tonight, presuming he gets the start? I think so much of what we've heard about him and what the reason the team is high on him is because he seems to have this kind of unflappable nature about him. How important is that for a goaltender in kind of any spot, but specifically the one Woll's coming into potentially tonight?
Yeah, you know, the things you said there make total sense, and I don't know Joe at all, but going from things that, you know, he's with the same agency, I've known a few guys that have played with him, and he seems like he's got that personality, like you just mentioned, that, you know, he can be thrown into a situation that's generally uncomfortable for a lot of people and a lot of goalies, and not an easy one to be in and thrive. And I think you just have to go back to last year, obviously, for him to get into that spot. I know the Leafs never ended up winning the series, but I thought he played extremely well last year in his first taste of playoff action. So why not give him the other opportunity that, you know, he proved last year he could do that. Before his injury this year, he had a lights out season, you know, and I think now it's a chance for him to just go in there. Honestly, not a ton of pressure. He can go in there, be himself, play his game, and, you know, hopefully give them at least some momentum tonight, and they can do the rest.
So earlier this segment, I was rattling off the numbers for the Maple Leafs on the penalty kill as far as save percentage. It's not good, right? And goaltending is such an outsized part of all of hockey. It's ridiculous. Goalies are very important. And they should win the Hart Trophy every year, Jake, as I'm sure you can agree with. But how much of penalty killing specifically, when we talk about structure and the penalty killers that are on the ice, how much of it is just, man, if you have the best goalie, you're going to have the best penalty kill?
There's yes and no to that for me. I think that I've played on some elite penalty kills in St. Louis, and I think the biggest thing about a penalty kill that gives, you know, communal success for a group is predictability. That's from, you know, F1 to F2 to, you know, the net front D to the flank D. I think when everyone is completely on, in sync on the penalty kill, we can talk about that throughout, you know, the whole 200-foot game. But if we're speaking specifically to the penalty kill, you know, comfortability with guys playing with each other, goalies reading off D-men, knowing when guys are going to go or not. So I don't think you necessarily need the best goalie to do that. I really don't. Obviously, it helps. It truly helps if you have, you know, Demko or Hellebuck or, you know, Binnington back there. But, you know, I think it's just about reads and understanding who's going to go when, what threats are you going to leave open, what are you going to eliminate. It's all about understanding what's in front of you, what's around you, your surroundings. And not all the time the best goalies have that. So I don't think necessarily need that. You just need everyone to be bought in collectively, understanding your assignments and just doing your job.
I love that answer. Mostly, like, first of all, because it provides a lot of insight, but mostly because it agrees with everything I was saying right before we brought you on, that the Leafs had a little bit of, they were kind of building this unit on the fly, some of it from deadline acquisition, some of it from guys being hurt, and there just hasn't been a lot of continuity for the last, I don't know, 20, 30 games of the season, quite honestly. And, you know, just hearing your answer there, you can see how the, just that little bit of half-second hesitation, I mean, we see it all the time, and at any moment in this game, it can kind of kill you there. On the other side of the goaltending matchup, Swayman has been nails. What are you seeing from him? It's been a very odd series to watch from a Leafs perspective, because you got to tip your cap to Swayman. He's been great, but the Leafs have had series where Vasilevsky stood on his head, or Bobrovsky has, and I'm not taking anything away from Swayman, but maybe you feel differently. It doesn't feel like he's totally stealing this series for Boston. It just seems like he's been kind of rock solid as opposed to, you know, transcendent or special. What have you seen out of him?
Yeah, I really like this game, obviously, like everyone has. He's an elite goalie in this league. He truly is. I think he's one of the best. His skating, his edge work is second to none. But, you know, I think you go back to a thing that we just talked about, comfortability. Like, there is a factor when you're a goalie of playing against certain teams they have success against. And you go back to, you know, before he started in the playoffs this year, he was 4-0 the last few games against the Leafs. You know, I think his record was, he's got a great save percentage, great goals against. And there's a factor of playing in another team's building that, you know, if you're comfortable in that building too, it just generates confidence in your game. And you go to his numbers and his records, and it just proves of that. And then you look at the series this year, and it proves of that again. Like, I'm not going to say that's the be-all, end-all, but it helps. You still have to stop the puck and you have to play well, but his game is solid. It's sound. Obviously, the Bruins are doing a great job. And the one thing that Toronto was so good at during the season, and I got to play against them personally a lot in my career and three times over the last 3 weeks of the season with the Devils, and they're so good at creating slot shots. Man, they're like, in the regular season, I know it's not the playoffs. The game's different. You have to be adaptable, but at the same time in the playoffs, if they can generate some more slot shots on Swayman, just make his life a little bit more difficult. You know, we always hear that saying, but what does that saying mean? That means making a goalie think. Mm. Making a goalie think about, is there another option here, another option there? And I think when you get a goalie thinking, then you get a goalie guessing, and then you can try to maybe make a play from here and there. But go back to Swayman. He's been tough to beat, and they're going to have a challenge again tonight.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like they're creating those high danger opportunities, those slot shots that you talk about. I mean, let's talk about that 2021 postseason series that you had a great view for. And Carey Price was spectacular in that series, obviously, right? Getting that Canadiens team all the way to the Cup final. He was no question a big part of the reason why that Montreal Canadiens team was able to win that series despite being 20 points back of the Leafs during the regular season. But that was also a different looking Leafs team in the postseason. This is a different looking Leafs team in the postseason. Every time it feels like the postseason rolls along, it's a different Leafs team than we're used to seeing for the 82 game regular season. Do you have a theory as to why things change for this team when the calendar flips, when we get into the postseason?
I mean, that, I guess, if you go back to the year we went to the final with the Canadiens, it's obviously things have changed a lot since then. You know, it's 4 years ago. No team is ever the same. I don't know if I can recall ever being a team in the history being the exact same 23-man roster every year. But, you know, when you don't win, you try to improve. That's every team. That's just not the Leafs. That's all the other 31 teams in the league. But when you don't have success, you try to find ways to regroup your, you know, your philosophy, your group, your mindset, your perspective. And then, you know, you get a new management in there as well. So you have a fresh voice and a fresh opinion. And, you know, he maybe has a different perspective on things than, you know, previous management and the coach. And that's just the nature of the beast. You try to bring guys in to improve your team. And, you know, I like what they brought in this year with, you know, Domi and Bertuzzi. And again, my buddy Joel Edmondson back on the blue line to bring some meat. And, you know, I thought he's played well for them this playoffs. And that's just the nature of the beast. I just don't think just because it's the Leafs, you know, there's always a new narrative all the time in this league, in this playoffs. Every day there's something new. But right now I think it's about trying to put all those pieces that they brought in to make work. And again, I'll go back, when you don't win in this league, it's unsuccessful. That's the way that, you know, players think, coaches think, managers think, and you're always trying to find a way to improve. And that's just every team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they did. They won a series last year in six games, and this one ain't over either.
Quickly, you mentioned your buddy Joel Edmondson. When you guys were celebrating that cup win, were you tempted to put on his crop top? Could you pull it off as well as he did, he can?
No, I don't have the eight-pack like Joel. I mean, I try to work for mine a little bit harder than he does. He is a freak of nature. He's got a gift of God, and he's one of the best teammates I've ever played with, and I'm sure all the Leafs guys in that locker room feel the same.
Yeah, and they'd like to see him celebrate a series victory. Uphill climb for them starts tonight in Boston. Jake, appreciate the time. Great job on the broadcast as well. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Jake Allen, Devils goalie. Yeah, I think he hit the nail on the head. It's like, man, during those Devils games, they sure created a lot of slot chances.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys are creating some of them, and yep. Man, last week I rattled off the stats that we're not allowed to see, but only Justin Bourne is allowed to see.
I think he then turns his laptop and says, "You want to see it, Kipper?" Yeah. And he goes, "Yeah, you tell me."
Yeah. But yeah, like some of those guys, and at his best, and certainly in game two, Austin Matthews was creating them at a similar level to the level he was creating during the regular season. Uh-huh. The one guy that was having a significant drop off in those numbers was Mitch Marner. And just, I mean, eye test wise, his team is not. Jeremy Swayman's been great. And have there been the occasional spectacular save that he's made? Yeah, but they're not testing him nearly enough. I mean, that's the first 40 minutes of Saturday was that. It wasn't that they didn't score.
No. Nope.
It's that there was not a dangerous look in the first 40 minutes of a game that you had to win to even the series.
And if you're not going to have a dangerous look, just get in his kitchen. I think that's the most frustrating part as well, is that there just doesn't, and I'm not talking about, unlike every postseason for all of eternity since Gary Roberts played for the Leafs, I'm not talking about scrums after the whistle. I mean actually in the course of play, being in the blue paint, being in his face, that's the way to beat this guy. There are few stats more predictive of general success in the league than shot slots. I think Megan Chyka had this yesterday. Of the top 14 teams in the league, 12 of them were postseason teams this year. You generate high danger chances. Generally speaking, if you're doing that, it's because you have good forwards. And generally speaking, those forwards can finish. So especially with this team, if you're able to generate the looks, you know, obviously diminishing returns as you go down the lineup. But if this top six is getting slot shots, I don't care how good Jeremy Swayman is. Well, I gave you the high danger. I've lost it. I don't know where it is right now in front of me, but it's not been good, the high danger save percentage for Swayman. So make him be great when it's at its hardest. He's been Swayman has been excellent when it's been relatively easy in the grand scheme of things, because the Leafs have made it kind of easy on him. The high danger chances he's not been great on, you got to create more of them.
You know who's been one of the worst goalies in goals saved above expected?
I'm venturing a guess.
Ilya Samsonov, -1.7.
Go.
So, I mean, the advanced stats aren't everything, but when they match something. The eye test.
Yeah, exactly. When the two meet.
He's 20th among goaltenders in these Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, when we come back, talk to a man who was on the call in our fair city on Saturday, Jody Shelley, former NHL forward, currently a broadcaster for TNT. He's on the call of Game 5 Islanders-Canes tonight. He joins us next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. We don't do enough role play on this show.
Oh, okay.
What do you think Sheldon Keefe's thinking, honestly, going into tonight's game? Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to role play.
Yeah, I was a little confused there. But
like, get inside the brain of
Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah.
If he was me, and the reason he is where he is because he's not me. If it was me, I'd go like,
part of the reason. It's a major contributing factor.
It's a big one. It's like, I'd go, you know, a few years of work or no work and pay doesn't sound the worst. That's why he's not me. That is where my head immediately goes. Because, again, the contract extension that he signed has yet to kick in. So, yeah, I don't think that's what he's thinking. I think he's thinking, I can't believe the potential last dance, and boy, have we been here before, is playing out this way.
Yeah.
With gloves thrown on the bench and doctors pulling Matthews out of the game and Nylander having migraines or whatever it was. I think that's probably the prevailing thought is, can you just let me go out with my best shot and know it's not good enough, as opposed to wondering what if, but how, when?
Again, I'm applying my sensibilities. And
yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, your part, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But also this part, because I'm also an angry guy, I'd be like, I wish I had screamed at these guys some more. Like, not just afterward. And maybe he is screaming at them. I don't think so, though. Like, I wish I had just let him have it. Who knows? Maybe that's happening behind closed. I tend to think probably.
Yeah. It feels like that'd be a departure from what we've seen.
All right, let's talk to Jody Shelley, former NHL forward, NHL broadcaster for TNT during the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's on the call of Islanders-Canes Game 5 tonight, which you can watch on Sportsnet 360 at 7:30. How's it going, Jody?
It's going great. How's it going in Toronto?
It's really
doing okay.
Oh, great. Super great.
It's cold, it's rainy, and the Leafs are about to lose. If I don't get Leafs hockey as of tomorrow, I better have a full-fledged golf season, and I don't have that right now. So that is how the mood is right now, Jody.
It's not great.
I get it. Yeah. You know what? It's you still got Leafs hockey tonight, so enjoy it. I mean, it's crazy, right? The emotional roller coaster you get on. I heard you guys talking about the little tip on the bench.
Uh-huh.
I love that stuff. I think it's about time stuff like that happens. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think I think you're going to see a heck of a game tonight.
I mean, it better look a lot different than the first 40 minutes looked like on Saturday. So you were in the building for that, Jody. Like, what the hell was going on in the first two periods of that of Game 4 on Saturday?
You know, I credit the Bruins. I really do. I thought they played extremely tight defensively. And, you know, once Matthews got out, those adjustments were made. They switched up a little bit. Robertson got up. His speed helped. You know, I think that's a big factor within a series when you can put speed on different lines against a team that seems to have rhythm defensively. Something has to change, right? And, you know, I think the Leafs have they've got a maturity to their game, but I just thought the defense were too slow with the puck at times. And that's what I saw. Just like it seemed like there was speed and then it got slowed down by the D. And in the third period, it just seemed like everyone got the tempo up a little bit and they were driving more and they got on the inside. And that's something that the Bruins have taken away, is that soft area play to the inside. The Leafs have used it so well. The Nylander, Marner, Matthews, where they can bump it low and get it there. And the Bruins have a game plan. So for the Leafs, I thought Nylander helped. You know, carrying the puck, it's such a big deal to do that, to try to break down the defense and then get the Swayman. But if they play like they did in the third, which I think they will, they're desperate. You know, they've made some adjustments. I think they want to drag Boston back to Toronto, and that's it's a 3-1 series. I love this. I think the adversity, hopefully they have the character to pull this through tonight.
You know, it is good that you mentioned that Boston is playing well in the series, because this will shock you. We haven't really talked about how Boston's played a whole lot. It's just been about what's not been happening from Toronto's perspective.
Yeah.
yeah, you got to give Boston credit. Definitely. From the Leafs perspective, though, I think it keeps going back to, and man, we've been having this conversation in this market for maybe not the full 7 years, but close to it, of the Austin Matthews era, is when you bank on having all that high-end talent, no matter how much credit you should be giving Boston, one of those guys kind of has to find a way to break through. You know, I'm not saying it's not a team game, and obviously the Leafs need contributions up and down the lineup, just like Boston's getting. Hello, goal from JVR. But how much is it just on, and you know, we know Matthews is banged up, didn't play the third. We know Nylander's coming back. How much is it going to take one of those guys to, and I don't even mean have a superhuman effort to win a game, but just to have a big shift early, kind of get the momentum going in the Leafs' favor, because it does feel like the tenor of that hockey game from the start tonight is going to have a big way. If the Leafs come out like they're playing that third period, then yeah, I think it's very different. But if Boston kind of chokes the life out of this game early, I wonder what that can mean for the Leafs.
Yeah, you know, it's funny in playoffs, because now they know each other very well, right? They've played the four games, you know their matchups, you understand what's happening within the series. And when you look at the rest of the series around the NHL, the quicker you find out or get on your game and start churning your game as a team, right? I mean, Matthews stepped up in game two, was it all world? He dominated. It was the player that you want him to be. Okay, you got to ham and egg it. So the next game, maybe you need the big save or the power play or the depth scoring or the whatever it is. But that is found through the team play. The way the team goes out, like they did in the third period against the Bruins, and had an answer to kind of come shift after shift and roll on them. And you didn't see that a lot in the first two periods, but the teams that are having success, and I look at Tampa, Florida a little bit, you know, their D are so good at getting out of their own end. That's something that's critical for the Toronto Maple Leafs and any team that wants success, because that's where you get your speed through the neutral zone. A couple good passes, plays up the ice, get in the offensive zone, and be on the same page. And you look at Florida, what they did to Tampa. You look at even the Islanders here with Carolina. They have a sneaky, very tight team game, and they wait for their opportunities. It's low event, but you understand they're dangerous because they play that team game, and that's what gives teams problems. And for the Maple Leafs here, I agree with you. The quicker they get on their game, you know what the Bruins are going to do now. You've got the book, you got the tape. But that sense of going out there and winning the puck race, getting to the puck first and winning the battle, getting the puck and making the right play, those are the things that are important. It's not who scores the goal. Who cares who scores the goal? Mm-hmm. Like, I watched Kucherov in Tampa for the first three games. Didn't get to the puck battles, couldn't get anything going, was frustrated. It's like, that's got to be the focus, the small focus here for all these guys in the playoffs. It's not about coming back from a shift and not scoring a goal and feeling bad about yourself. It's going to come, but you got to get that team game going first.
Yeah, and scoring on the power play would certainly help. They have one goal on the power play this entire series. I know it hasn't been a strength the last couple of months of the regular season, but in February we're like, finally, it's realizing its potential. I was actually looking at your hockey reference page as well, Jody. You have a power play goal in your career. Do you remember that goal?
I should. But I don't.
It was 0-3, 0-4. Yeah. It's your one
power. Was it against Calgary?
I don't know. Calgary. I don't have the game log, but I was like, what? Oh, there's a power play goal in there. I know. I thought you might remember it. I'll look it up in a second here. But
I should.
Yeah. So what's going on to the Leafs power play that should be their strength has just been not just anemic because they're not scoring, like they're not even creating opportunities. That's part of it too. Sheldon Keefe has talked about, hey, at least you're supposed to be creating some positive momentum because you're creating opportunities. That's not happening. The beginning of that game on Saturday, they had an opportunity on the power play. Nothing happening. What's going on in the Leafs power play right now?
Well, what I saw, because I do have one power play goal, so I shouldn't
That's
be
right.
breaking
yeah.
power plays. So I get where you're
specialist.
Going.
Specialist, yep.
just what I saw is the power play has to outwork the penalty kill. And the penalty kill, you see them have success because there are four guys in the goaltender with a game plan to outwork from the inside out. And for the Toronto Maple Leafs, with the skill they have, to be able to get the puck back and move it quickly and decisive, they're not doing it. It seems like they're reacting to the penalty kill of the Bruins instead of dictating the pace of play with the puck. And, I watched Florida in their series. You know, Tampa's trying to keep up with the pace of the puck and overwhelmed with the battle of the guys who go and get the puck after they give it up, or there's a shot and rebound to get it back. So I didn't feel any momentum or flow within the power play or concise moments with the puck. It just felt like no one took control. There was hope plays through the middle of the ice instead of just trying to shift the box around, understanding that something's going to open up. It's almost like they were trying to formulate something or a play that is written up instead of just reacting to what's happening. That's my opinion, because when I watch other power plays, it just seems like things are – the battle comes first, then the setup comes first, and then the options are all available as you move things around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I also have the box score from that game where you scored the power play goal. It was one of two Jody Shelley goals in that game. It was in
Sniper. I remember that game.
It was against the Calgary Flames. Yeah, you scored on the power play in the first period to tie the game up. Yeah, again, first of two goals, two of your three that season. But yeah, no, okay, now is it all snapping into place? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Let me tell you about that. So it was Jamie McClellan, Noodles, who I trained with in the offseason. And it was early in the season, and I had a two-goal game, and I thought, this is the year. Like, this is the year I'm going to get 15 bangers. And I ended up with three.
That's right. Yeah. 66% of your goal scoring output in that game.
Yeah, yeah, big night, though. Like, we could talk about the season, sure. But that night, yeah, that's awesome to hear. There's been a lot of talk this week. Well, not so much this week, given what happened on Saturday. But heading into Saturday night, about the Leaf crowd. You've played in a million buildings. You played in a ton of games as a player against the Leafs. You broadcast in that building. What do you make of the environment in the Leaf crowd? You know, a lot of people have got on the fans. My take on it has been, well, when everything that happens in front of you is bad, I'm not surprised you're a little hesitant to get excited. What have you made of the environment you saw at Scotiabank for that game and kind of comparing and contrasting to some of the other crowds you've seen or played in during the playoffs?
Well, listen, I grew up all over Canada, and I was calling a game Saturday night in Toronto, Boston, Toronto. I was jacked up, and I thought the crowd was too to start, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought they were there in the third period. I love playing in Toronto. I know it's not the loudest building. There's louder buildings and more energetic buildings at times throughout the league. You know, us in Columbus, we have one of the worst teams in the league again this year, and we've had great fan bases, great crowds, but it's not like it's similar. I mean, there's moments in the game where it's like, yeah, show us something, give us something.
It's also hard to be quiet. It's hard to be quiet with a cannon in the building as well. That's the other part of it.
Well, yeah, maybe you guys need something like that. But you notice it after the first period that no one's behind the bench. I mean, that's whatever. Those bunker suites are there. But that happens in New York, too. They have those bunker suites behind the bench at Madison Square Garden. I don't know. I think the fans are fine. They're not the loudest in the league, but I always love playing in Toronto. I mean, it's just, to me, it was an intimidating place to play. And I see what they're saying. I mean, but I don't know. It could be better, I guess. But I see what you're saying as well.
Yeah.
The product. You're sitting there waiting for something to happen, where when you go to Madison Square Garden, there's a buzz the whole time. When you go to Montreal, there's a buzz. The music's loud. The people are on top. They're all involved with the cheers and chants that are going on. So,
I mean, I can't say I've been lucky enough to play in Montreal, as I'd imagine you've been, but I've made the pilgrimage for a Leafs-Habs on a Saturday night there, and yeah, it feels different. Like, there's no way to put it. The other thing is just, I mean, they've lost. I think it's now six straight games at home. There's this sense of, like, impending doom, and, you know, I don't think the players feel it as well either, but you know, home ice is supposed to be an advantage for you. And I don't think the players are sitting there going, oh, man, we're hopeless. We're at home tonight. We can never win here. But what do you think it does to the psyche of a team? Maybe they don't think about it at all. I imagine, you know, different strokes for different folks on the team. But what do you think it does to the psyche of a group when, forget home ice not being this fortress for you, you just can't win a game there to save your life in the playoffs right now?
Yeah, that would be a hard thing to deal with, I guess. But I would hope that they're so tight and locked in the room that it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? They know they're loved in Toronto and across Canada, and they're recognized around the world. They know there's pressure on them. There's pressure on every market to win. But I would hope the internal pressure is higher and that, they just lock themselves in and block the noise out. I mean, they still have home ice advantage. I mean, it's just a matter of sometimes, and I've seen this with players before, they play to the moment instead of being in the moment. And I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, oh, I have a breakaway. Am I going to score? You know, it's like they're not locked in on the moment just to get it done. It's more worried about the judgment of what's going to come after the game. You know what I mean? I feel like sometimes that happens with players where they're just not totally locked in on their role. Left winger tonight, chip the puck out, grind it in, get a hit. Oh, the crowd's with, you know. It, to me, sometimes with the noise outside of the locker room, you can pull your attention away or take away a little bit of that extra effort because the spotlight's on you too much. You feel like you're watching the music video while it's playing instead of watching it after to see the result. And I feel like that can pull a little bit of that grind and grit away from the game. But that's just my opinion. I don't know how they deal with it in Toronto, but I would hope they're locked in to be like, screw it. Let's just go out like madmen tonight and do our jobs and see what the result is.
Yeah, whatever they've been doing hasn't been working. So, change it up. And maybe that's what we get tonight. And we get a team that isn't thinking about the consequences or the conversations that are about to take place.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. And I think the poster boy for that is Mitch Marner. And we started this conversation with you saying that you thought it was a great moment that those three dudes, Austin Matthews, William Nylander, and Mitch Marner, were going at it. I don't know if you included the glove throwing in there, but yeah, I mean, let's expand on that. Like, because I've been trying to get somebody to say that there's a potential positive that came out of those guys interacting in that way. And after the game, they all said the right thing, that, hey, it's just some guys that are trying to win. Okay, well, is that the positive side of it, that they did show some emotion, albeit not on the ice? It was on the bench, but it was some emotion.
Damn right. I mean, do you want to see it? Don't you? They're down in the game. I want to see that they care. And I've been in locker rooms with players. Joe Thornton, for example, one of the best playmakers that's ever played. And, you know, you sit there sometimes and you watch him and he gets frustrated and then he gets mad and then it's an argument and then everyone's fine. Then Joe's happy. And next thing you know, we're winning the game and it's a power play. And you get on the bus after and you're having a beer and you're thinking that was all right. You know, but in the moment, it's like these guys are competitors. They know what they're part of. I want to see that emotion. I watch this team from afar. I watch Nylander. I watch him cruise with the puck. And to see him say what he said on the bench to the guys, I love it. I love that guy even more. It's like, okay, you called him out. You played a good game in your first game back. You know, maybe that's a way to drag guys into the fight. And it's such an important part of being on a team. It's a little bit of confrontation. And it doesn't matter what it happens. You look at Tkachuk last year calling out the Florida Panthers. That was a pivotal point for them. You know, it was a guy from outside the locker room that called out the team and snapped them into place. There's moments that happen. Hopefully it's not too late for this team. But to me, the emotion and the care, thank you. Now, hopefully that settles them down just to go out and push each other.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny how these things work, right? Because if the Leafs, they come back and they, you know, force a game seven and win it and they're on to the second round, we're talking about that as the catalyst for all of this here, right? Like it just does seem to be the way things work. It's possible Austin Matthews doesn't play tonight. What do you think it does to, you know, I don't think it changes what William Nylander or Mitch Marner expect or need to do in this game, but what do you think it does to some of the more kind of fringy players in the forward group, knowing that they're going to have a bigger say in how this game goes tonight if Matthews doesn't play? I don't think your fourth line guy is sitting there going, oh, thank God, no Matthews tonight. But I have to imagine that you sit there and go, all right, I'm going to have a touch more of a role if he's not involved. What does it do to the rest of the lineup when you're missing one of those superstar players?
Opinion, because I've seen it in locker rooms. When you have superstars sometimes, you can be within the group and no one plays above your superstars. No one's going to play above your superstars. And sometimes in situations when a superstar has been shutting down and you're waiting for him to get things going, you're all kind of stuck. And now everybody's got to step up. It's a big hole to lose Austin Matthews, obviously, but you saw it in the third period. He was out and guys, it's not just playing up in the lineup. It's like, okay, you know, now I'm going to get the Marner's going to have the puck more. Nylander, it's on him. These guys understand that it's a different dynamic and a different situation, and it's their time to raise the level. And I thought everyone did. So for one game, they can do it. It's one of those things where one player can break the game open and be the game breaker, but you need the team play to carry you through the playoffs. I hope they get it done tonight. I think it'd be a different feel in the locker room. It's weird when someone's missing. It doesn't matter what's happening. If someone gets another role, there's a different feel in there for a short term for that. You're right. It's an opportunity, and I understand. It's not talking about, but we ought to play a little better team game, and guys need to step up and drive it more. And you're not waiting for Austin, who had 69 goals, to get the next goal, because you can get in that situation sometimes. So we'll see. I would expect him to have a ton of jump here tonight. And Marner, you know what? He's not had a great series, but he could change the dialogue here tonight.
Oh, yeah. No, there is.
He has to.
For a lot of reasons, not the least of which is financially. He needs to turn this narrative around this postseason. Jody, great job this postseason. Thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime we got a power play on the expert on the show, we're always thankful. Yeah. So thank you.
Well, anytime you want to break down the power play, I do have that one moment of my career. So I appreciate that.
Well done, man.
No, guys, I appreciate it. Go, Leafs, go. Hope you get it done tonight.
There we
go. Thanks, Jody. See you, Jody. Jody,
I'm not allowed to say it, so he
Shelley,
does.
Former NHL forward, on the call for TNT tonight. Islanders trying to stay alive against the Canes. Sportsnet 360 at 7:30 tonight. Yeah, I mean, all those things are true when you don't have your superstar, and we've seen this team play exceptionally well. I mean, that Blues game where they had nobody in the lineup,
mm-hmm.
was like maybe their best all-around effort of the entire season.
The one game without Matthews was a 7-0 win this year.
Sure. And they looked pretty good in the third period. It's easier, though, is like if Austin Matthews just does the game two thing again. Like,
God, I got to say, given the options available to us, I would so gladly sign up for that.
Yeah. I mean, let's put on your optimism hat if you're a Leaf fan. And think about the narratives tomorrow in Boston. If Austin Matthews doesn't play in this game and you somehow win it, and the Bruins are looking at recent history and you beat Swayman, so you've slayed that dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you have all the pundits talking about the Bruins' epic collapse against the Panthers a season ago. It's 12 months later, and it's only one game, but like without the one guy, the 69 goal scorer, and they beat the Bruins to send it back to Toronto? I mean, this is the potential for a tight butt syndrome.
Yeah, it's going to feel really silly wrapping up the show today, given how the game's going to go tonight with that tenor. But yeah, we can dream.
I wouldn't bank on it. I also wouldn't bank on the Leafs just bowing out meekly, because usually they drag this thing in.
It's true.
All right, this has been the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning.